commencing countdown. T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Ignition.
What an incredible smell, you scum!
Dear Lord Jesus, this ain't happening, man. This can't be happening, man. This ain't happening.
Inconceivable!
Autobots, transform!
And welcome to the Skiffy and Fanny Show, episode number 5.
Frolicking through fields of fermions.
I'm Sean.
I'm Adam.
And today we do not have any of the glorious intro discussion because we have a special main segment that will be coming after the news. So we're just going to dive right into the news. The first thing of which I am doing on my personal blog, a giveaway of 3 copies of Procession of the Dead by Darren Shan. I will link to the post in the show notes. People probably remember who Darren Shan is because he wrote the Demonata series, and he's also the writer of the Cirque du Freak series, which has recently turned into The Vampire's Assistant, a movie with that guy from, oh god, the NASCAR one with Will Ferrell. What was that one? Do you remember that movie?
Ricky Bobby.
Ricky Bobby. There you go. Yeah, he was the second guy, the sidekick. Shake and Bake, you know, yeah, whatever. Yeah, hopefully people actually have seen that movie so that I don't feel like I'm making ridiculous cultural references.
I haven't.
Oh, well, at least you know the movie. So yeah. That's good. So I'll make sure to have a link, and you all should go enter. It's his first adult novel, since he typically does young adult, sort of urban fantasy, dark, horror-y stuff. This is more like really weird, dark, urban fantasy for adults, so... yeah, I will link to that. So beyond that, we have a little bit of science. There's a study from the Research and Social Stratification and Mobility Journal that finds that having books around the house is correlated to how many years of school a child will complete. And some of the stuff in the study is that it says that households with 500 or more books have as much of an advantage over households that have fewer than those books as you would get with educated parents versus uneducated parents, or professional father over an unskilled father. And they say that households with as few as 25 books complete on average 2 more years of school than those in households with fewer books. The kids, obviously, not the houses themselves getting the extra years of school. But this is actually good news for book lovers like me, because that means my kids will be geniuses. So, Adam?
Yes?
Do you have anything to say?
Nope. Pretty cool study.
That's all?
Well, yeah.
It's a pretty cool study. Wow.
It is a pretty cool study.
Adam's stamp of approval. It's a pretty cool study. Ching, ching. All right, well, then we'll just dive into the next one, which I'm going to let you introduce because this is the one I think you're most excited about.
Cautiously optimistic is a better term for it. Neal Stephenson's great book, The Diamond Age, is coming to the Sci-Fi Channel. And is being produced by George Clooney's production company. And the writer who is doing the adaptation is unknown.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when you have, you know, something coming to the Sci-Fi Channel with an unknown writer, you really have to be, you know, careful, because the Sci-Fi Channel does not put out the greatest, you know,
oh,
shows,
yeah, absolutely,
and movies.
They put out some utter drivel.
Mega Croc versus Ultra Octopus.
Oh, see, like, that was Sci-Fi was such a cool channel when I started watching it, because they used to play all the old, like, really crappy sci-fi movies, and that was okay, because I knew they were, like, 60 years old, and so they were ridiculous, like the old Godzilla and stuff.
Oh, I love the old Godzilla.
But now it's like they're trying to recreate that stuff, and it's just not...
doesn't work.
It's not as cool to recreate a bad movie. Like, that's just not cool stuff. But mm-hmm. taking old movies and playing them, you know, like, I could watch Total Recall. Like, was Total Recall a good movie when it was released? No, it's terribly campy. But I watch it now and I love it because it just works for some reason. So, Yeah, I like Total Recall.
I've never seen it.
You've never seen it? It's a good one. You should see it. Yeah.
Doesn't it have
The special effects. Yeah, it does have Arnold in it. The special effects, though, for the time that they made it, are really, really, really amazing. It's also one of the most violent films you would have got at that time. So, yeah, it's really well done, though. And, like, the special effects, you know, when you realize it's a 1980s movie, really well done. So,
mm-hmm.
You don't get that a lot. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, because Zoe Green is she's the person writing this. She's only done two things. She's written Tigress and Book of Shadows, the latter of which is being directed by Rob Reiner, who we should all remember as the director of The Princess Bride, which is a classic. Everybody should see it. If you haven't, you're a communist. But none of this stuff we've ever even heard of. I mean, you look at her IMDb page and there's nothing there, so I just don't know how they even picked her. I mean, how do you pick somebody who essentially is a nobody to helm something as fairly large within the science fiction community as Stephenson's work, so...
Stephenson.
I say Stephenson. Whatever. You can say Stephenson. It's got
PH. You can't say Stephenson. It's not correct.
It is phonetically correct. It's got a PH. It's a F. If you wanted Stephenson, you should have used a V.
No, that's Stephenson.
No, it's Stephenson.
No.
He can even say it's Stephenson too. I'm still gonna say Stephenson. So.
Well, that's just being ignorant.
No, it's. I'm just. You just can't change phonetics. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you can. It's English. No. You can change whatever you want.
Well, you can, but it's unacceptable.
Okay.
Just think about text speak, man. Is any of that legitimate language? No.
Okay.
It's not.
Okay.
You're just going to go, okay, that's it?
Yeah.
Not going to argue with me about it?
No, I'm right.
Just because you're not right just because you don't argue with me about it.
That's not... No, the chain of events just goes, I'm right, so I'm not going to argue with you about it.
That logic doesn't follow.
It doesn't have to.
You're insane.
Maybe.
Yeah, you are. You've completely lost your mind. Anyway, I guess since we don't have anything else to say about... Stephenson.
Okay.
Yep. Thank you. I win. Anyway, moving on to the thing. Stephenson, shut up. I'm going to mute you in about a second, and then you'll never get the talk, and then it'll just be me.
I don't get to talk anyway.
Well, you never say anything, jerk.
Well, that's because I'm polite, and you just never shut up.
Whatever. Anyway, why don't you tell the people about the next one, which I think is the most entertaining thing to happen this last week.
Yes, a Twilight fan wrote a letter to Universal Pictures because she was upset with the remake of The Wolfman, which came out earlier this year. I think she said that it ripped off Stephanie Meyer's and it was, you know, really offensive to Twilight fans. Yeah. Now, it was hard to understand the letter at times.
Yeah, because some of it is incoherent. She makes, like, she says things that just don't make sense because they don't have context. But, yeah, I mean, some of the things she says, like you said, it's a remaking of the wolf pack in Twilight, that it gives werewolves a bad name. It makes them look like deformed mutations of rabid dogs. And then she questions the mythology because she wonders how a werewolf can be killed by a silver bullet. Apparently they can't be killed by a silver bullet in Twilight. I haven't seen the new one, so I wouldn't know that. But it's just like, and she's a huge Taylor Lautner fan, and so she just, it's a hilarious letter. You guys have got to read this, because she's just completely oblivious to the mythology. Like, it's pretty funny, but, yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, nothing, I was just hoping you'd make the mistake again with the name.
What mistake? I don't know what you're talking about.
That's because it didn't record the first time we tried to record this. So you can deny it up and down, but you did call him Taylor Hautner.
I never said anything. You said it. I see you've said it.
Okay,
that's very
Sean.
Disturbing. Very disturbing that you're saying Taylor Hautner now.
Okay, Sean.
Yeah. Yeah. You need help.
Yep.
Very much. Very much.
Just because you deny it doesn't mean it didn't happen.
Well, if there's no evidence.
Oh, there doesn't. I have evidence.
You have no evidence.
I say it happened.
That's not evidence.
It's evidence to me. And the people who trust my mind.
Well, anybody who trusts your mind is perhaps a little deranged, so...
I'll remember that when these people take over the world.
Yeah, so the letter, moving back to the letter's just ridiculous. Completely oblivious to the fact that werewolves have existed in literature and mythology for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. So you guys should all read it, and it's pretty funny. Yeah, possibly the dumbest Twilight fan yet.
And there's the hate mail.
Yeah, no, there'll be death threats.
Death threats and hate mail.
Death threats in the form of hate mail, yeah.
Hey, if they're coherent, that's all I care about. I just want them to make sense.
They won't be. They'll be in, like, text speak. They'll be, like, worse than Yoda. Like, if Yoda sent you a death threat, like, at least you could figure it out because you could just move the words around. But Twilight Uber fans, they'll be in, like, some sort of mutant text speak where the words are no longer words. They'll spell Jacob wrong. It'll be, like, YQXPVJ. It'll be something just, yeah. I'm just telling you, I've seen the letters, man.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So they'll be incoherent. If we get a coherent letter, I'll be shocked.
Me too.
Yeah. So that's it for news. We'll come right back with our secret segment thing that we have been saying is coming.
Well, it's not secret. You tweeted it right after we recorded it this week.
Oh, did I? Oh.
Oh, did I? Yeah, you did.
Well, we only have like 23 following us on Twitter, so.
Semi-secret.
So it's secret to everyone but those 23 people.
Which are probably our only 23 listeners.
No, because we've had a few more listeners than that. So I know some of you don't know. It's a secret to some of you. I'm pointing at you people. So we'll be right back with our semi-secret segment. All right, welcome back. We have a special interview today. We have with us Neil Trousseau, Vernon Mortensen, and Kelly Parks. They are the producers, writers, and directors of a new web show called Universal Dead. How are you guys doing?
Doing good.
Excellent. Great.
All right, so first things first, tell us, what is Universal Dead?
Okay. Well, Universal Dead is our web series about a world 5 years after a zombie apocalypse has nearly destroyed civilization. Vernon and I are zombie movie fans going way back, and we talked about doing something zombie related for a long time, and we came up with the idea for what this world might be like. And then I wrote a short film called The Presentation that essentially comprises our first three episodes, which we have since expanded into a feature-length script.
And that is what became Universal Dead, correct?
Yes, yes.
Okay, fantastic.
And that was Kelly Parks.
I'm Kelly Parks.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah, well, hopefully we'll keep the names from getting too confusing. So where did the inspiration really come from for Universal Dead? I mean, you say you watch a lot of zombie films, but...
Day of the Dead.
Yeah, that's my personal favorite horror movie of all time. And, you know, so much of the zombie stuff that gets made now... Oh, and by the way, let me be specific. Not the recent remake of Day of the Dead.
No, yes.
Which sucked. That was awful. No, the original Day of the Dead, I think it's 1985 or 84, something there or somewhere.
The old Romero stuff.
Yeah, that one. So that's a really grim, old-school zombie horror movie. Not the real kind of zombie parody movies that get made endlessly today. So that's what we wanted to go back to, is that kind of serious, greedy kind of horror.
The Day of the Dead, was that the black and white one?
No.
That's Night of the Living Dead.
That's Night of the Living Dead, okay.
And then Day of the Dead is the third one.
The third one.
After that came Dawn of the Dead, which takes place in the mall.
And was also remade recently.
Yes.
And that remake was good.
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't think it was too bad. I like that one a lot. I'm a big zombie fan, too, so... That's pretty much all that scares me these days. All right, so I think the one thing that's really interesting about this show, other than the fact that it's a zombie movie, which for me is immediately like a bonus, is the fact that so many of you that are a part of this were in the military. There were four Navy SEALs and various other people from various branches of the military. How did you guys come together? There's so many of you from various places, so it's really curious.
Yeah, there's a lot of military guys involved. I'm not military myself. I'm actually ex-CIA, but both my business partners here are Navy guys. Neil is a SEAL, and Vernon's a SWIC, which the easiest way to explain that is just to think commando. We had a lot of other military people involved. I don't know if you noticed one of our one of the bodyguard detail as they go into the building is a guy named Cade Courtley. He's a Navy SEAL, and he's also the host of Surviving Disaster on Spike TV. One of our other soldiers, the guy who goes into the room with them and to protect Dr. McAvoy, his name is Craig Sawyer, and he is on the History Channel on a show called Top Shot. He's their technical advisor.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Long time ago, Neil, this is Vernon Mortensen speaking. Long time ago, Neil and I were both in the Navy at the same time, and we deployed to Somalia together. Did you guys see that movie Black Hawk Down?
I have, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so Neil and I were both there in Somalia, you know, about the same time they made the movie about Black Hawk Down was about that same time. And back then, Neil and I were trying to develop comic books, and I would write the stories and Neil would draw them out. And then, so years later, when we left active duty, we both went to film school, and it just kind of translated. We both had already been working together, and we were really close friends and became business partners. And then a few years later, we met Kelly Parks at an industry mixer, and it's history after that.
This is Neil Trusa here. Yes, it's a really interesting thing because right off the bat, you know, Vernon and I were doing a bunch of different things, collaborating, drawing, and it really followed through with what we were doing in the military, plus how we did after the military, or we were on leave, you know, and then coming out of it, I think we crossed paths like two or three times since we got out. It was really weird. And we kept in contact, and the connection stayed there. And plus, we kept all of our acquaintances and friends from back in the day. I think we vowed to do some stuff that didn't break any of the bonds or sell out in the process. So right. You'll see some of that in what we do.
Okay, cool. All right, so Adam, I think you should ask your question that I'm sure you're dying to ask.
Which one? I'm dying to ask a lot of questions.
The one about zombie media.
Oh yeah. So you guys already mentioned the George Romero movies, which have a very strange temporal setting, going from night to day to dawn. But anything else like zombie, you know, like comic books or you know novels or any other zombie based media?
Well, I've read like the Max Brooks stuff, of course, I'm really more of a movie guy. Actually, I'm also a big fan of Last Man on Earth, the Vincent Price movie, which was, of course, George Romero's inspiration for Night of the Living Dead.
Right. They were doing it first.
Yeah, that's. I don't know if you've seen that one. There's been three movies based on the Richard Matheson novel, I Am Legend.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The first was a movie called Last Man on Earth, starring Vincent Price. It was made about 1964. And I believe that's the first movie ever to have like an apocalyptic, some kind of disease wipes out humanity and changes them into something strange. Although in that storyline, they were actually not zombies. They were drinking blood, but they weren't vampires. They were something weird. But anyway, so movies like that I've always liked. You know, then it got made into the Omega Man with Charlton Heston, and then finally into the Will Smith version.
Even Outbreak movie is like, you know, 28 Days Later. I'm a big fan of that, even though it's technically not a zombie movie because it has to deal with, you know, a virus or some sort of outbreak. It's still, to me, it's following the same, you know, kind of storyline. So I really love that movie. I watched, when I was in film school, I watched a bunch of really, really old black and white zombie movies, and they weren't apocalyptic at all. They were just, you know, voodoo men would change people into zombies and they'd walk around killing people. But so I have this really long history with watching zombie movies. And I when I was a kid, my parents were missionaries, so I could have comic books, but they couldn't be zombie or anything creepy or anything like that because my parents just wouldn't allow it. So I never got to see any of those comic books until I became much older. And by then, the movies had already made an impact on me.
It's fantastic. I'm also a fan of the 28 Days and Weeks Later stuff. I really like those movies. Hopefully, yeah, when 28 Months like Later comes out, it'll be good.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, I hope. I thought 28 Weeks Later was, it had its moments, but, you know.
I don't know, there's that scene in 28 Weeks Later when all the people are trapped down below in that basement.
That's
and the cool. lights are out, and they're all getting zapped by that zombie guy. It was pretty cool.
That was cool, yes. But
yeah.
I'm not a big fan of the whole shaky camera thing. A lot of times during 28 Weeks Later, you can really even tell what was going on because the your view is just jumping all over the place.
Yeah, that's kind of the new, kind of, I don't know, big thing in film right now. You got that with the Bourne movies. They really did the shaky cam for the fight scenes.
So, yeah.
That actually brings me to an interesting question. Since you guys seem fairly well, not read, but watched in zombie film, how hard was it for you to sort of come up with your own zombie sort of work without trying to, I guess, take too much from what you'd already seen, like coming up kind of with your own original take? Like, was that fairly difficult, or did it sort of just come naturally?
Yeah, here's my thing. Cause my background is in aerospace engineering and physics and stuff like that, and I love to put real science and, like, real science details into stories. And the short film that this started as was all about a scientist giving a presentation about his theory as to how the zombies actually work, like what the mechanism was behind it. Hmm. And I can't say anything about it because that's what episode 3 is all about. So you'll see that when episode 3 comes out. But it's nothing that's ever been done before.
Oh,
it's
okay.
It's a new take.
I'm excited now.
Yeah, Kelly had a definite passion and direction from the get-go.
Yeah, he knew. He had worked it all out. You know, he's Mr. Science. He actually writes a blog for FeoAmante.com, and in the blog he talks about the science of science fiction movies.
Yeah, there's FeoAmante.com is an awesome horror thriller fan site. If you're up on your Spanish, you know that means ugly lover. And it's a very popular site. Actually, if you Google horror thriller, I believe it's the first thing that comes up. It's and I do movie reviews for them, and I write. I always include in my reviews what I call the science moment, where I discuss, like, would this really happen, or would this really work, or what would it take to make it really work.
So you must have a lot to talk about then, because movies tend to not get the science very right.
Correct. Yes, I blame that on the fact that it's mostly liberal arts majors as opposed to engineering majors who end up writing movies.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're more concerned about other things than the science details, and that's fine. I know I'm kind of a nitpicker about that, but you can do both. You can tell a really good story and have a great plot and everything else, and get those details right. It is doable.
Definitely. So then I think my kind of last question for you guys in terms of production is, I recognize a number of the names that are in your cast, like the second I saw who the cast was, because I loved Fire and the Fly, and D.B. Sweeney, who is one of your main characters, was in that movie. And then my grandma turned me on to Alien Nation, and Gary Graham was in Alien Nation. And then there was Doug Jones, who's somewhat a little bit not as well known as the others, but he has done some fairly good roles. Yes, exactly. He was in the Hellboy 2, which is fantastic. So,
and Hellboy 1.
Oh, that's right.
No, in Hellboy 1, he's always been Abe Sapien. It's just that they had somebody else do the voice. David Hyde Pierce did the voice in Hellboy, in the first Hellboy movie. But it was still Doug in the costume. And actually, David Hyde Pierce, he won some kind of award for it, and he refused to accept it because he said Doug should have gotten it, because he said there was no reason for him to be there, that Doug did a great job.
Yeah.
So that's why they let Doug just do the voice himself, do the whole character in the second one.
And he did a pretty good job, I thought. I saw the second one, and I liked it.
He was also, if you saw Pan's Labyrinth, he was Pan. He was the Faun. And he was also... also in Pan's Labyrinth, he was... If you remember, there's a part where she goes into this room where there's this big feast laid out, and there's this weird guy with no eyes. That's also Doug Jones.
The guy with the eyes in his hands?
Yes,
okay.
And yeah, he was also the body, but not the voice, of the Silver Surfer in the last Fantastic Four movie.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
So he's been around.
Yeah, he definitely has. Yeah, I recognize him from some of those films, particularly Silver Surfer. So how did you guys get these guys on board? Because it's not like, you know, these are some fairly well-known actors, at least in terms of television for the D.B. Sweeney and Gary Graham, and definitely recently within movies for Doug Jones. So how did you get them to sort of come into the project?
Well, we owe almost all of that to Comic-Con. It began with Gary Graham. I was at Comic-Con a couple of years ago, and he was there signing autographs. And I'm a big fan of Robot Jocks. That's one of his early movies. And so I started talking to him, and it turned out a script that I had written was getting shopped around, he had seen it and read it and liked it, so we kind of hit it off, and we started talking, and so I got his contact information. And then a little while after that, we did our first web series. It was a comedy called The Crusader, which you can see if you go to watchthecrusader.com. And we asked Gary to do a cameo in that. He plays a really sleazy marriage counselor in that.
Yeah.
It was a great job. And it was through Gary that we got a hold of D.B. Sweeney. The two of them are good friends. So when we wrote Universal Dead and we were looking around for people to play it, we approached Gary and he said yes, and he sent it off to D.B. and D.B. said yes. And then as far as Doug Jones is concerned, that was just he approached us. He saw The Crusader and really liked it, and sent me a little message saying, you know, that this was awesome. If you ever can use me for anything, let me know. So I said sure. So you know, we asked him if he wanted to be in Universal Dead, and that worked out great.
And it's great casting. If you watch episode 2, you can really see Doug really come. He shines.
Yeah, he's a great actor. We're so happy to be able to give him the opportunity to do some acting without a costume, because he's always in costume in all his movies.
He was a pleasure to work with. He was a really hilarious guy. Really,
and the nicest guy you'll ever meet.
Probably. Oh, yeah. But, yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think another aspect of which I don't know if Kelly's going to say is that like what you brought up earlier is the weird dichotomy of the three of us and the fact that we were bringing actually real SEALs in to play SEALs, a kind of interesting thing for these actors to play with.
Right.
Oh, definitely.
Talk about a great package. You got all these great movie stars and TV stars, and then, you know, we had these four good friends of ours who are Navy SEALs but are now trying to make it as actors and as technical advisors. And we said, hey, why not just have real Navy SEALs play Navy SEALs? And it kind of all came together, so it's almost like a perfect package. You got movie stars and you got real Navy SEALs. What else could you ask for?
Oh, and one more thing. One other thing we got from Comic-Con is Valerie Perez. She plays the zombie we saw in the room there, Angela. And we met her at Comic-Con. She's that rarest of rare creatures, a completely wonderfully hot geek girl. And she, we met her at Comic-Con. She was walking around dressed as Wonder Woman. And so we started talking to her, and turns out she was been in a few web series. She was in a web series called Paula Peril. She was in a fan film about Lara Croft called Tears of the Dragon, and she does a great job as the zombie.
Yeah, she is.
Okay. So one quick question, since there are many, many episodes of this, I'm assuming, how many episodes are there, and what is the schedule? Because I couldn't find the schedule of when they're all supposed to come out.
Yeah, we've been having some issues setting a schedule just because we've been trying to release them as fast as we have them ready. And we thought that would work out to about every other week. But then we had a couple of technical issues that delayed, like episode 3. Really, we wanted to have it out by now, but it's going to be toward the end of the month before we have that one ready. But we're trying to get on schedule to be every 2 or 3 weeks. And as far as total numbers of episodes, we haven't shot the final ones yet, but we're estimating about 12 altogether for the, if we take this, because we wrote this essentially as a feature film script, and then we're breaking it apart into episodes. So it'll be about 12 episodes altogether.
Fantastic. So the plan is every 2 to 3 weeks, but barring disaster.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just like really excited for episode 3. So.
And I'm sorry. One more thing about Comic-Con. I just remembered. We actually have an announcement. We're trying to get our some stuff put together there to do some appearances for our actors, and we hope to announce some more stuff soon. But the one thing we have definitely now is there is a studio called Exsanguine that has a booth, and they'll be hosting us to do a signing of our DVD. And that'll be on Friday at 1:30 at the Exsanguine booth at Comic-Con. It's booth number 433.
Oh, okay, fantastic. We'll make sure everybody has a link to all of your guys' stuff, and particularly we'll put that in the show notes just in case, so they know where to go to you guys for autographs. So.
Thank you very much.
Sure, no problem. Adam, did you want to ask them something about the iPad?
Oh, yeah, I was wondering, you guys are online and on YouTube. I was wondering if you were had, like, plans to release the Universal as, like, an iPhone app or an iPad app.
You know, I hadn't thought about that.
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
I watch on the iPad look great.
Yeah,
that'd be a good way. Actually, yeah, that is a good idea, because that'd be a good way you could to, like, notify people as new episodes come out and stuff. That's a really good idea.
Yeah, see, and we owe it all to you.
You're the man, brother.
Now, the next time they do an interview, they'll go, yeah, Adam from so-and-so came up with that idea.
Yep.
Cool. Well, other than that, I mean, is there anything else you guys want to let us know about the project or upcoming projects that you've got going? Or
We do have a boxing movie that's going to be out this summer. It stars Martin Sheen and Michael Madsen. It's called Chamaco, which means the kid in Spanish. It was shot entirely in Mexico City. And that will be released in July all across the country, and in August in California. And then we're shooting a Western this summer, and that will hopefully be available next year. It's called The Sorrow. And that's what's on our plate right now.
And you got Martin Sheen for the boxing movie?
Neil and I were executive producers of this movie. It was a co-production with Mexican production companies and the United States and American production companies. So there's like 20 people involved to get this movie made. But it's really an amazing movie. We were at been to a film festival in Mexico called Morelia Film Festival, and we were at the Palm Springs International Film Festival. We've got a few more coming up this summer, but it is going to be released in July across the United States, and then in August for all of California.
Oh, I think it's actually July is in San Diego.
No,
August
it's
is
been
LA.
Changed.
Can you change it? Oh,
yeah,
can you change it?
They changed it. Yeah. August for San Diego, LA, and San Francisco.
Okay, fantastic.
That's just one of many. I mean, between the three of us, I think we've got enough stuff for quite a while, just in the back.
We're going to be busy for years.
That's good. That's good. And you guys should keep doing the genre stuff, like more zombies.
Oh, yeah.
And.
Yeah, we will. I got lots more for that. Don't worry.
Tons and tons.
I'm the company geek, so yeah. Don't worry. I got lots of stuff.
That's awesome. And keep using the military folks, because that's definitely something I think that sets your production apart from others. Is not you don't see quite as many real military people playing actual military parts. So
you know the Marine at the gate who speaks into the walkie-talkie, he's a real Marine in episode one.
Oh, right.
Well, and the girl with the gun with the rifle
the blonde,
at the gate,
Donna
the blonde,
Galloway,
she's also a Marine, a real Marine.
That's just awesome. You guys got actual people to play real parts.
Yeah.
And the Marine at the gate, the one who talks to the walkie-talkie, that's Michael Broderick, and he's a working actor. I mean, he's been in quite a few things. He was in a bunch of
G.I. Joe lately, the movie.
The G.I. Joe movie.
He was
in
Screaming
Jericho.
Man.
He's a working actor, but he's also a former U.S. Marine. The two guards at the gate, one was Donna Calloway, and the other was Neil Trusso, who you're talking to right here.
Yeah.
He's the one who with the shotgun.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Okay, cool. So I saw you on screen. That's fantastic.
Yes. So, I saw Neil on screen.
Cool. Well, thank you guys very much for doing this interview with us. I really hope people sort of the Universal Dead takes off for you guys, because I really enjoyed it. I may be biased because I love zombie stuff. So, but
well, we made it for you then.
Yes, I'm very pleased with it. So, and I look forward to the rest of the episodes. So thanks again, guys, and I'm sure we'll be hearing from you again.
Yeah, have a great day.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was our pleasure. Anytime.
Talk to you later.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
And we're back with our reading and writing segment. Why don't you go first, Adam? What have you been reading, and what are you writing, or finished writing?
Well, I keep trying to finish, like, 4 novels I have going, but it's not working, and I keep getting distracted by short stories, which I've read quite a few good ones this week. Probably the best was Zima Blue by Alistair Reynolds, which is just a really good short story if you like science fiction and tragic artists, I guess. But, yeah, that guy is, hard science fiction. He is, the leader of that movement. And I finished one of the 2 stories I'm working on that uses the immortal jellyfish as the center point. This one was the one that takes place on a generation ship.
Yeah.
And, it's a bit longer than I wanted. It's like 50% too long. but I think I have a lot of extraneous exposition I can get rid of. But I really think that I haven't read it yet. I'm letting it, just kind of marinate for a while. But I think that I started out more hard science fiction-y in style. Then I go to something somewhat Lovecraftian. And then I go retro pulp at the end. So, yeah, it's going to take some editing.
Almost a de-evolution for you. That's really bizarre.
I did it on purpose to be cool. Yeah, it was fun. It's fun. It's creepy, kind of gross. It's good stuff.
Did you say on purpose it would be cool?
Yeah, if you did it on purpose, if you did like the de-evolution of science fiction back to, Jules Verne.
That would be so much fun to like start in like a more modern sort of really heavy prose style and then evolve backwards in a story. You could do that. You could have it, like, start with one kind of a character that fits that original style and then just change the characters as you go until you got to that pulpy character in the end.
I don't understand why when people do time travel stories, they don't, try to make their prose fit the era. I think that'd be interesting.
It would be interesting, but I think people don't do it because if you don't do it right, you could just pull somebody right out of the story and then it'd be garbage.
Yeah, it's because they're scared. That's why.
They probably are scared, yeah, maybe. Maybe, or they just don't want to write like that. I don't know.
They're scared.
Anywho, so I am currently, technically I'm basically done now with City of Saints and Mad Men by Jeff Vandermeer. I'm on the appendices now, and so I'm just kind of going to nitpick at those as I go, because they're basically not stories, they're like letters and things like that. But I basically read that book in like 2.5 days, so I just couldn't put it down. It was really good. And I did finish Blake Charlton's Spellwright, which last episode I think I said I was almost done with. I had like 50 pages. So I finished that, and I'm reading a bunch of other stuff. Oh gosh, what? I'm reading too much. I'm just reading a lot of other stuff. I started Natural History by Justina Robson, which I'm not enjoying very much. And I'm still reading The Left Hand of God by Hoffman. I'm kind of poking at that. I'm not quite into it yet, but mostly because nothing really big has happened. So that's kind of what I'm reading. There's some good stuff going on, and hopefully when I get to something I really, really like, I'll be able to wax lyrical about it. I like City of Saints and Mad Men, though. It was a really good book. You should all read it. And as for what I'm writing, I finished the Bizarro piece I was working on, and I think the ending works, even though it was 2,500 words longer than I thought it was going to be. And Adam, you'll be getting that soon with my edits. And say what?
Nothing.
Nothing? Oh, you sounded like you're complaining.
No, I said fun.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it should be. I hope it is fun. I hope the ending worked out. We'll see.
Oh, I was being sarcastic, so.
And then other than that, I'm just kind of figuring out what I want to write next. I tried to look at something last night to fiddle with something I have called Roy, but I found out I really don't like the story.
Roy.
I don't have a title for it yet. I'll probably change the title, but the tentative title is Roy because the main character's name is Roy.
Oh, come on. You can do better than that.
Well, it's just this is the title I'm using right now, just so I know what it is. It's about a guy who is imprisoned, basically, by the corporation that runs all the governments, and he is plugged into what is essentially all of the networks. They use him as a conduit for feeding information, and it's sort of like him getting the information from the resistance and sort of battling his protocols that have been sort of installed in his brain. Yeah, it's sort of like cyberpunky, I guess. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, that's cyberpunky.
Yeah, hopefully it'll turn out well. It's but I'm not sure what to do with it yet. But other than that, I'm not. That's pretty much it right now. So why don't we give them their question of the week and we will sign off.
Okay, your question of the week is, John and I were discussing this yesterday during our first recording of episode 5, and we're talking about what makes science fiction, which will probably be one of our discussions for next episode.
Yeah.
But the question for the week is, do you believe that science fiction has to have actual science integral to the story to be considered science fiction?
That wasn't the question. The question was accurate science.
What did I say?
You said actual science integral to the plot. The original question was, does it have to have accurate science to be sci-fi?
Okay, well, answer one of them.
Answer both of them. There we go. There's two questions. You have two questions. Do you think
they're
science
pretty
fiction,
much the same.
They're kind of the same. Do you think that
they're the same?
It has to have science that's integral to the plot.
No, I said integral to the story. Okay.
Yeah, well, integral to the story and integral to the plot, same thing.
Fine, we'll go with the easier one. Does science fiction have to have accurate science to be considered science fiction?
No, have them answer both.
No,
that's two interesting questions.
Too much work. Our listeners are lazy.
They can answer whichever one they want.
Fine.
You just insulted all our listeners by calling them lazy.
You're insulting them by not knowing them.
Whatever. You're a goof. So if you want to send an answer to the question or either or question or both, if you want, doesn't matter, you can email us at skiffyandfanty@gmail.com. You can send us a voicemail at 206-337-8423, or you can leave a comment on our webpage, which is skiffyandfanty.wordpress.com. Or you can, if you follow us on Twitter, you can send an answer that way in 140 characters or less. And our Twitter is obviously twitter.com/skiffyandfanty. So, yeah, so we hope to hear from you guys, and until next episode. You want to say goodbye, Adam? You usually say goodbye at the end.
You didn't say goodbye.
I'm sorry. I will fix. We'll be back in the next episode. Have a good one.
Bye-bye, Stevenson.
It's... Ah!
Autobots, roll out!